Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Jembe, I'm Millie Bell's daughter, and I did my first Dumpty Dum intro when I was 10. I'm now 16, and as it's Millie's last social media roundup, I thought, why not do another one? Dumpty dum de dum de da, dumpty dum de da da, dumpty dum de dum de da, dum de da li da, dum de da li dum de da li dum de da li da, dumpty dum de dum de da, dumpty da li da.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that are centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the powerful locomotive that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the little engine that could,
Kerry Warbis.
And we are joined by the evil Dr. Beechin, who is
Peter Ficklin.
And the last part of this week's slow descent into steam engine whimsy, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum is from Djembe, who is the daughter of our soon-to-be departing Millie Bell. Kerry, if somebody would like to send us in a Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with Dum to 077 862 00690. Thanks to Yokel Bear and Millie Bell, our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Lucy V. Freeman.
On this week's episode, we hear views from Rosie Porty, I think going to hear her twice, Dusty Substances, Claire from Clapham, Cranky Yankee, and Sandra Jenkinson. But first, we have our burning issue of the week. This week's hot topic is Joy Horville. On a scale of fab to brilliant, how awesome is she? Peter, Kerry, what are your feelings about the Geordie newcomer? Let's start with you, Mr. Fickling.
Well, I mean, I've been a big Peggy Woolley fan, and it was one of the few times I kind of like sort of locked horns with her, and not that she was aware, because I felt she was really horrible to Joy. And there's a sort of an essential good naturedness about Joy that is sort of, I don't understand why everyone's squashing her, and especially in a village that's supposed to be sort of famous for its welcoming nature, or sort of self-advertised as famous for its welcoming nature. Joy kind of shone a sort of a light or held a mirror up to the fact that, you know, there's a bit of a hard edge, and everyone was, you know, like royally unpleasant to her. I don't know what you guys thought.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember when she first came, the only thing that was a bit sort of irritating that was commented on a bit was that she talked incessantly at everybody. But having said that, this week I have realised that she's not called Joy without accident, you see. She is a Joy.
I think part of the reason maybe I was so kind of defensive for her is I might be a bit of a joy hauler myself. I do see people's faces kind of drop when I kick into second or fifth gear. You know, one of my chat marathons gets going. I actually had it today with my next door neighbour. You know, I just saw him kind of open the door and look absolutely full of gloom. So maybe I'm projecting slightly.
Well, the thing is about Joy, and is that not only is she new to the village, but my God, doesn't everybody know it? Because she's trying incredibly hard. That's the thing, isn't it? She tries so incredibly hard to ingratiate herself, to be in the middle of things. And that's what's kind of initially, anyway, kind of wound people up the wrong way.
I was just trying to think, what has she actually really done wrong? It's nothing, is it? She's just tried hard to be really lovely to everyone.
Yeah, are you supposed to wait the well-advertised 20 years before you're allowed to call yourself a local or a village? You're supposed to just sit indoors until someone eventually comes around with a cake or something. I mean, you know, if you watch American movies, it's always, you know, Amish people marching from sort of 12 miles away to bring you an apple pie or something and help you raise a barn.
That's one thing that COVID has brought to my neighbourhood, is that, you know, we have a WhatsApp group for my street and we're lending things left, right and centre and helping out. Like yesterday, I borrowed a power screwdriver from a neighbour because I didn't have one.
Was it Makita, Kerry?
It was. Yeah,
oh, and did you fall in love with it, Kerry?
Yeah, I went and borrowed a screwdriver and I fell in love.
With the screwdriver.
Yeah.
Well, that solves all the problems that Royville was trying to take care of last week. I did a portmanteau of Joy Horville and Royville.
Yeah, you did, Royville.
Now, Joy Horville has got a whole legion of fans, and here is a message from one of her fans.
Hi, everybody out there in Dumpty-Dum land. It's Rosie Porty here. I hope you're all doing well and staying safe. I'm calling in this week to celebrate hearing from Joy last week on the monologues, and it's just so great to hear the character coming into her own, whether it's flirting with her Spanish tutor online, handing out horoscope guidance to Johnny, rescuing Fallon from a toddler breakdown, and then ta-da, coordinating a sting operation against the vile Timotei from her Beechwood home. This vindicates my long-held view that Joy is a fantastic character, brought in to drive plots forwards and to be a support to those in need. I know she'll be there for Kirsty when it all goes tits up with Philip. So hurrah for Joy. Take care, everybody, and stay safe.
Well, isn't she just some all-purpose character, Joy? If you just go through what Rosie said, you know, she's taken down one of the local wrong'uns, a big gangster. You know, she put her own sting operation together. She's great with toddlers. She's given, you know, emotional and relationship advice to others. You know, is there anything she just can't do?
I'm worried about her, though, because she's brought down the criminal. So I'm a bit worried about retribution happening.
But my gut is, though, that because we are in the weird twilight world of monologues, that actually we can conveniently now forget about Timotei. This was a way, actually, to get rid of the character, you know, being this like, malodorous spell around Ed Grundy. Because really, the big bad is now Philip Moss. So the fact that actually the storyline with Timotei was not really actually resolved, we've done this now. Joy Horville has come in, you know, detective style, solved the case, and then we can just move on. I'm not wrong, am I, Pete?
Well, I agree. In fact, the only thing that annoyed me about Joy sort of capturing him, sorry, you keep on saying Timotei and I keep on forgetting his name, Timotei, that's it.
Yeah.
The only thing that annoyed me about Tim being caught was that it did seem a bit low rent. He's gone from being this kind of well-connected gangster sort of operating pan-national schemes to going door-to-door trying to make 70 quid.
Pan-nationals? It was barely pan-Borsetshire. Where are you getting pan-national from?
Oh, I mean, wasn't Ed driving sort of up and down the country with kind
of articulated
lorries full of nuclear waste?
Yeah, you're spot on. Well done.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
See, he's quite big and...
And yet here he is going around Joy's house asking if he can get rid of her, you know, old kitchen and some recycling.
Mm.
Anyway, sorry, I'm being a bit pedantic, but...
No. Well, you were right to pull me up when I was trying to be all proper smart-ass by saying how the heck was Timotei pan-national. But you're right, you know, Ed was getting up at the crack of dawn and was up till all hours and nearly fell asleep at the wheel. He was being pushed that hard by this wrong'un. So you are right, you are right. But Joy Horville, is she going to be Marjorie Antrobus? Mark II, in that she is this kind of confidant, strong person in the village, lives by herself, because it's not by accident that Fallon said what we all know is that she's lonely, you know, and you know, so is she going to be the new quiet matriarch of the village?
No, because she doesn't like being lonely. Does she? She's, you know, it was really sweet when she said people passing by, you know, give her a wave, and she's glad of that. She's ordering vegetables so that she can talk to somebody to be delivered, isn't she?
Yeah.
And no, she doesn't want to be alone. You know, Marjorie was quite happy, wasn't she, with that?
No, she was.
Whereas our Joy, and she's, you know, perving over Eduardo and wishing that people would come and visit her.
Extra, you know, points Rochelle. If you can remember. Can you remember Eduardo's surname?
Oh, it's a footballer.
There are about four or five different. Was it? It began with a C. Caldero or something.
Think of a famous fictional boxer, and you're right there. Balboa.
Oh.
Who was it? Ah.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, so Eduardo Balboa is her Spanish teacher, which I was delighted by. And he's indeterminate height, dark and handsome.
Yes. Oh, yeah, because she hasn't seen him stand up yet. Because he conducts his Spanish lessons lying down.
Because even with her, even when she was doing her monologue, there is a sort of a gentle wit to the way that she talks. And I mean, and obviously multiple writers must have taken a tilt at her, but they've managed to sort of, they give her a sort of a, you know, a very gentle sort of warm, I'm trying to think of, I can't think of the word, but sort of, yeah, there's a humour to her personality that I think they get across really well.
Yeah, and I love her voice.
Well, I was going to say, isn't that kind of where half of the humour comes from? It's because she has this very beautiful kind of singy-songy lilt, and it is that Geordie accent, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fantastic part of the world. And I used to be the sort of slightly chippy southerner who would get annoyed whenever people from up north would say how sort of stuck up, frosty, and sort of, you know, reticent to kind of be friendly we were. And sorry, very bad English. But yeah, then I went to Northumberland, and I was like, absolutely, we are everything they say. These people are amazing.
I was just going to say, did we ever solve the mystery of why she, you know, if she's so sort of into Rochelle, why she moved away from her?
We haven't at all. And that's what I was going to kind of go on to say before kind of wrapping this up. Obviously, this loneliness and this hurt that she has is wrapped up with her relationship with her daughter, with Rochelle. And we've got, can any of you wildly speculate as to what has gone on? The reason why they are estranged, because they obviously are.
Yeah.
I mean, beyond cliches, I mean, I can do one of my normal nonsensical rants, but I don't really think that's going to help anyone.
Do you think Joy's been in prison and this is a new identity?
Oi, that's my job, Kerry. Nonsensical ranting's my job. maybe she's, you know, maybe Joy is kind of like in witness protection or something. She's, you know, she was running all kinds of games. You know, this could segue neatly into just sort of Johnny's gambling problem. You know, Roy was running numbers up in Newcastle and now she's hiding down south.
Well, let's see how long it's going to take for the script writers when everything is back to normal. You know, when we get to the heart of actually what's gone on between Joy and her daughter. Because I don't even think we know where Rochelle lives, do we? It's not that she's up in Newcastle.
No, I don't think.
No, she spent some time this week disapproving of Rochelle's parenting methods. There was sort of stuff about screen time, and she was talking about how the kids were playing around the pond or whatever it was. And that's the first time I think she sort of said anything negative about Rochelle in public. Mm. She's in public, and obviously that's part of the monologue sort of delivery method. But, you know, previously it's all been Rochelle's the greatest, she's successful, all this sort of stuff. It might be what was that amazing program with Rob Brydon, the one that kind of launched him? Jeff and something.
Where he's in the taxi.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Marion and Jeff. Yeah. It was absolutely fantastic. It might just be something sad like Marion and Jeff, and she and Rochelle has just moved on and has a busy life. It might be something as prosaic and as dull as that.
Mm. Bless Joy when she said, "You can't put a price on a smile."
sorry to return to a previous one of my pet theories, but I do feel that basically they made a mistake getting rid of Vicky, and now they've just had to re-engineer her in Joy. I do feel like she does a lot of the jobs that Vicky used to, and I was a big Vicky fan. Just
you are right, but there's more pathos actually with Joy than with Vicky. Vicky's pathos was in that she always wanted to be a mother, and then she has motherhood, and then it was going to be her fighting to make sure that Bethany was going to be accepted by, you know, by society. And we never quite had that, did we? Because the Tuckers got shipped out to Brum. Mm. Whereas with Joy, it's written much more on its sleeve. You know, this the character of Rochelle, her daughter, and their estrangement is just been there from day one.
Yeah.
But I agree. They do serve similar purpose. Though Vicky wasn't exactly the busybody in the village that Joy is.
But now Joy is going to be. I mean, it's going to be glorious to see. You know, how many times are we going to hear people saying, "Oh, I got Joy wrong," or "I've got to go and, you know, maybe I should have given Joy more time," and "Oh, look what she's done for the village." You know, the Grundys are going to be round there. Clary's definitely going to do something nice for her.
I don't honestly see her as a busybody either.
Oh, she is.
No, I didn't think that.
No, she is.
She's
just interested in stuff. I don't think busybodies, there's an element of not niceness about them. I honestly can't think
there's no agenda.
She hasn't got any side to her.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I suppose this is how we, you know, what we associate with the expression busybody. I don't mean it in terms of she wants to run people's lives, but she wants to be in the middle of the village. Number one, because she's new. Number two is because she's lonely. So she will appear to be a busybody for people. You know, if you're Linda Snell and this woman, you know, pushes away into the, you can imagine how Linda would think that this woman is pushing away into the village. She hasn't quite done her time yet before she wants to be on the committee organising the Flower and Produce Show or the Village Fete, etc. You know, it's not that she's a bad person at all, but it's a case of you haven't quite done your time. You know, you haven't been here for 25 years before putting yourself up for parish council type of thing.
Props to Fallon then for inviting her round and recognising that she's a lovely woman who just needs a bit of company. Mm. And even at that point, Harrison was like, "Oh God, it's Joy." You know.
Yeah. Although he's going to be a big fan.
Well, exactly, because they're a crime busting double act now, aren't they?
I mean, I think Royfield, you were talking about perception, and Kerry was talking about the kind of, you know, the emotional truth. I mean, I can see how. I mean, it basically everyone else is playing catch up with what we, the listener, have known since day one, which is Joy is a decent and good person, and to question her motives and look for some kind of more malign intent is just to get it all wrong.
Yes, for sure. My last thought on Joy Horville is this. It's not by accident that she lives next to Kirsty and the evil Phil, because when that augers ka splat, she's going to be there to pick up the Kirsty pieces.
Ah.
You know, we've had this foreshadowing with her, you know, she was trying to bring round food. There was something when Kirsty and Phil first moved in. I can't remember whether she was bringing round food for them or she was saying, "You can come round to mine," or something or another. That was it. She says, "You can come round." And Kirsty and Phil had to run out there. Do you remember?
Yeah.
So they are setting up a relationship between Joy and Kirsty. When Kirsty finds out what Phil is up to with his horses, She's going to be there to pick up the pieces. Absolutely.
Yeah, because other than Fallon inviting her round, I was trying to imagine who else in the village would sort of have time for her, because there was Tony for a bit, wasn't there?
Mm.
That didn't go too well. But
we like Joy, don't we? We don't want Joy to suffer any more than she has to. We want her to have
Well, unless either of you got any more to say about Joy Horville, I think we should do a little bit of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, it's Waking Kraken.
Hello, Royfield and all Dumpty Dummers. It's Nick, the Waking Kraken from Deepest Hampshire, along with the Chickens of Ambridge. Long time since I've called in. So I wanted to firstly congratulate you, Royfield, on the way you dealt with those that horrid little boy that Zoom bombed on the last Zoom that we had. You should be doing relaxation tapes, your voice, honestly. I wanted to mention about Harrison's grand gesture. I think Krusty would have been horrified by the plastic waste that he'd ordered from, obviously, that online company that wasn't mentioned, i.e. Amazon. I don't think she'd have been too happy about all the plastic, you know, the paddling pool and all that kind of malarkey. Somebody mentioned about Emma and Ed and how they'd cope with all the children. I think they'd be absolutely fine. Loads and loads of outside space, and Emma would get them doing lots and lots of fun things. And Peggy, like the cockroach of time, thrives while others wither and die. So there's no hope of her shuffling off during COVID. She's just going to hang around like the vampire she is. Anyway, you've kept me going over lockdown and various bits and pieces, and hope to talk to you soon. Take care.
Well, thanks, Waking Kraken. What was this Zoom bomber then? Because I missed that, Roy.
It was when we did Sunny Ormond, who plays Lillian. There were about four people who weren't supposed to be there. There were, I don't know, about 70, between 60 and 70 people on Zoom. And I was just admitting people. And they were smarter than the first time. You know, with them, where the old gentleman just got his John Thomas out and just went for it.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
Did you not?
No.
Peter, it made the national news, sir.
It did.
Where have you been? So so this time it was, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes in. I'm speaking to Sonny and I said something and three people just answered line after line. You know, I said to Sonny, are you going to, I can't remember exactly what it says, but, you know, are you going to do X, Y, and Z this weekend with your family? And somebody said, no, I'm effing not. But obviously when people speak, their name comes up and then quite simply you just go and just remove them. Yeah. This happened three times in very quick succession. Like it wasn't even a hassle. Then when we went on to the quiz, doing the pitch around, somebody started drawing over the images. And at first I just let it go. And then they started drawing some kind of lewd stuff slowly but surely. And I just says, look, just stop, right? I don't know what pleasure or fun you're getting out of doing this. We are here just to enjoy ourselves. We haven't done anything to you. Stop spoiling our enjoyment, right? Just stop. And they did, and they went.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's what they're referring to. And they just stopped, just disappeared.
Maybe they wanted to be told off in your, you know, apparently in your very smooth, beautiful voice. Kerry, I didn't realise this. Has Royfield got a very attractive voice? I mean, I haven't. We all know that, but.
No.
Well, you really put. Oh, thanks, Kerry.
No, I didn't say no. I was like going no. Pete thinking he didn't have a nice voice. But yeah, you have got a lovely voice. Obviously,
you make
a living out of...
It was just being firm, but not losing my rag and stuff.
It's
and
a really good tactic, that, though, isn't it? Because what it does is just highlight how idiotic they are, really.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And
it doesn't work on me and Kerry, so, I mean...
What else did Waking Kraken say?
She said that Peggy's a vampire cockroach.
Well,
so
I'm a bit of a Peggy Woolley fan, and I just think this piling on that people have of Peggy Woolley is just mean beyond belief, considering she's supposed to be 90 odd and whatever. She's the matriarch of that family. She had an abusive alcoholic husband. She brought up three kids by herself, etc., etc. She came out of the East End of London. You know, the gal did good. That's the way I see it.
She also brought up, which did not occur to me at all when I was listening to it, about the amount of plastic that Harrison was purchasing.
Yes.
I
didn't even think of it. Did you two? That it, you know, the plastic pineapple fairy lights, the paddling pool, goodness knows what else. There was a whole list of activities and things which we can perhaps talk about later, but it was all a bit OTT. I mean, nice effort to sort of show the woman that you love that you want her to have a relaxing time at home, but
maybe I think it's an astute observation to make. You know, Fallon of all characters is going to want to upcycle, recycle, but who's to say that actually he didn't get everything actually secondhand and is then going to donate it, you know, on Freecycle? We don't know that he actually got them from Amazon. He could have got them from Freecycle himself.
Only Dwayne the courier can tell us.
That was actually a high point of the week, I thought, was Harrison's little preparation.
Little?
the length of the description. Right? No, you're right. It was quite sizable. I mean, it was it was Magaluf in a back garden, wasn't it? It was quite something.
It really was. What did he call it? Costa del Ambridge, he called it.
Yeah.
Cocktails, intimate pergola. A massage, a barbecue, a disco. What else was there? Watching Reservoir Dogs. Did a bag search and frisked her as well, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, it's something I have to remember. This is the thing. So something I have to remember when I listen to The Archers is that I am not, first of all, in Ambridge or in any way the target audience for pretty much anything that anyone wants to do. But how would you feel if that was that you came home and your partner had laid all that on?
The cocktails in the paddling pool, great. All the rest of it, bit much, to be honest. And
he's
playing La Bamba as well, which is a bit of a no-no, really.
Kerry, go around the corner. You're not allowed to come home for half an hour, so you're now late. You're in your clothes from a hard day at at work, and you step in, and the first thing is you have to, you know, and by the way, you pointed out on your tweet.
There's a bag search.
He's got an agenda. He was very, you know, Harrison has some pent-up frustration.
Mm.
So I think, you know, he accelerated pretty fast.
Well, Daisy scuppered that, didn't she?
Mm.
The arrival of Daisy.
I don't know. Just the whole thing just felt a little bit too clunky for me. Just I don't know. I'm trying to be as generous as possible. I appreciate that. I don't know. Can we just have another caller?
If he had done three of the 25 things, that might have been okay.
Well, I don't know. I really like people to be happy. And I think in terms of drama, it's hard to write people that are in love and that are happy, write them in an interesting way.
Mm.
It's just hard. It's what we want in real life. And even though we say we want to watch that on TV or on on the radio. We actually don't. We want strife. We want misunderstandings. We want animus. We want angst. We do. That's much more interesting. However, there was something about this which just didn't quite sit properly with me. And maybe it's just the length of time and the description of everything, because we don't have an episode with, let's say, five or six characters. At most, it's four now, at most. And everything just feels incredibly elongated in terms of time. So
yeah,
they can't layer things.
Yeah, exactly. So it felt excruciating to me. And yeah. So I listened to this in the bathroom. I had a shave. I cut my hair. I had a shower. And I managed to do things which would have taken me, I don't know, a good hour and a half. And this episode was still going on, and I'd done all of those things.
And yeah, he was kind of running through a list, wasn't he? Really, I've done this, I've done that, I've done this. Oh, I wait till she sees this.
Yeah, and the thing is, and I'm up for the character of Harrison Burns, you know. And I think we so obviously, it's what I said before, seeing the emergence of him as being a more center stage character going forward. Mm. You know, he's going to bust open the whole Phil and the horses thing. That's going to happen. He's going to get the plaudits of the village, etc. He's a thoroughly decent guy. He loves his missus. They're going to start a family, etc., blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. This just felt totally excruciating for me. And I just think it's the delivery mechanism which we have at the moment. It was case of, okay, I get it. You know,
do you know the story of Cliff from Cheers, how that character entered the show?
No.
So John Ratzenberger, I think that's his name, he went to audition for the role of Norm, and he could sense he wasn't getting it. And as he walked out, he said, "Are you going to have a pub bore?" And they said, "What? No, but why?" And he explained the role of the pub bore would be that, you know, not only a useful character to have there and a natural character to have there, but also someone who can segue between different characters, can be boring someone side, one side of the bar, can segue across. And you see that in The Archers all of the time, the shop, the bull, and there's all these different set piece kind of scenarios that they use to help you sort of do exposition on things like this without having to chew through actual episode time. Mm-hmm. And they haven't got any of that. So they have to, you know, to Kerry's point, they have to read out the, you know, the full shopping list of items. There's no other way of doing it.
Mm. Expert analysis. It's the reason why we pay you the big bucks and we have on the podcast. And on that note, let's keep it up in Geordie land. It's Mia.
Hi, Royfield and all Dumpty Dum peeps worldwide. This is Mia in Newcastle land. For a kickoff, thanks for the turf wars with the Academic Archers. I love both groups so much, and it makes me very happy when you come together like that. I don't really have anything to say about the monologues per se this last week, although I think Joy is a dream. I like her musings. But about the coming of the dialogues that are going to be coming soon, and my concern that I aired a few weeks ago about some of the very older actors, like the one who plays Piggy, making the journey to the mailbox. I think even she's in Spain. So I'm not so sure. Perhaps it's time for one or two of those older characters to be written out. Please God, Jill must die. However, I also want to say a great big thank you to Yokel Bear and to Millie Bell for their Facebook roundups. It's been a joy listening to them, and I wish them well. I wish the new ones great fortune too, as they take on the mantle. But that's all for today. So this is Mia signing out. Hooroo!
Oh, Mia. Jill must die. I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, that's quite. I mean, I would have thought Jill's like sort of tofu, just a complete. You know, you can't really have strong opinions either way. I would have thought, but apparently not.
Oh, you
she must die.
You can have strong opinions about her.
I'm sensing definitely. You have a strong opinion.
Yeah, but you know, the coming of the dialogues. Yes, how they'll go into, you know, that from the monologues will be interesting. And whether the older actors will be able to do that and go to the studio, Are they saying that the dialogues will have to be done in a studio, or that they've found the technology to do it?
They've written their own technology.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering that.
Yep. So it can't happen a moment too soon, I think, for most people. But yeah, the clever boffins down at the Beeb got some custom own software. So.
So they're remote but together.
You assume it's not just for the archers.
Well, yeah, you'd assume that it isn't. I must admit, not that I know much about anything, and that's not false modesty, but I don't understand why they couldn't use CleanFeed, what we're using right now.
Mm.
I get it that Zoom is doing a whole load of things in the background, so you can't sync. But with CleanFeed, it's much more syncable and is just like a live open channel. So, but maybe they've just modified this. Who's to know? Who's to know? But
with this, Royfield, you can eliminate background sounds that pop in, can't you?
Because it's all recorded on different tracks, which you can actually do with Zoom as well. That's just within the you go underneath the bonnet of Zoom, and it record, if you've got 50 people on a Zoom call, it can record all of them individually, so then you just...
But if there's background noise, like there was a car alarm going off here just now, could you get that out of the recording? Could you?
Sounds like you've never heard one of the shows that we've done recently.
Well, I know. I'm talking to the audience here, my love.
Oh, sorry.
It's a rhetorical question, but you can.
Yes, Kerry, you can.
And could you put sound effects on as well in the background? Could you put a sheep at this point when we're talking?
You know what? Right now, in the edit, when people listen to this, they think we're in the middle of Brookfield. There are sheep bleating. There's a couple of pigs over in the corner, a snorting, whatever pigs do. And I will layer all of that on. However,
can you hit Command Shift Barry White for me, please? Give me rumbling baritone, deep voice. That would be much appreciated.
No, but I can play a little bit of Barry White. I can only work with what I've got, Peter. Do you know what I mean? I'm not an alchemist.
And then I prove your point with my reedy little laugh.
Only a fool maybe takes things for granted. Just because it's here today, it could be gone tomorrow. And I guess that's why I cherish you so much, because you haven't changed.
Mia, thank you for all of your support. And also, we'll be giving our Millie Bell a special tribute at the end of the show. But thank you for mentioning the work of Millie Bell. And now it's Dusty Substances.
Hello, it's Dusty Substances here, the wrong sort of listener. I haven't called in for a while. It's been very odd. I keep forgetting that The Archers is on because I am out of routine at home. And also The Archers is out of routine. But I've been catching up with the summaries on the Sounds app when I haven't been able to listen. And I've really enjoyed the Zoom meetings that we've had with members of the cast when I've been able to get to them. Just ringing really to say I'm glad that normality is looming. I think it was a really good effort doing the monologues, but when we get the dialogues back, it will be brilliant. Having spent much of lockdown doing drama online with various groups of people, it really is tricky to do it on Zoom with the delays and the broadbands and everything going crazy. So well done for what they've done. But I'm really looking forward to getting back to normal and seeing some loose ends tied up, not least Kirsty and Philip. So fingers crossed for all of that. Anyway, love to everybody and hope everyone stays well. And I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Oh, lovely Dusty Substances. She's a long, long time fan and contributor, isn't she? And is great on the Twitters too. And a bit of a thespian, as she mentioned. So she's been out of routine and is very excited about normality. And, the Kirsty and Philip thing, will they sort of get straight into that when the dialogues start happening?
You two told me off for being naive about that, but I really, really want my, it's more of a request or prediction or a sort of combination of the two. I really want Philip, not necessarily to get away with it, because I do understand that's not how docudramas work, but I don't see why we can't have the audience knowing one truth and then the knowing the truth and the people in the village not knowing about his side life. For a while, at least. I don't see why it has to be a big kind of a big reveal where he gets hauled off to the Nick or something. Anyway, that's what I hope. I don't want Kirsty and Philip to end quickly. I want them to keep on going as a couple.
A long future for this docu-soap, isn't there? So they don't need to tie this up in the next month or so. It could rumble on a bit longer with a bit more of an interesting situation dramatically.
Kerry, are you as impressed as I am how secure Royfield's managed to make this bed sit? I mean, we've never even managed to get into the same room, and he keeps that fridge incredibly well stocked, I've got to say.
I hate sleeping on the floor, though.
Yeah, I have a mattress or two, Royfield.
Yeah. I've never got on with futons, so this floor thing's horrible.
Yeah, and I wonder what Mrs. Royfield knows about, you know, about his dark life as a kind of a black market podcaster.
Really good record shop in the late 80s to 90s doing UK garage black market. Anyway, Claire from Clapham.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. Claire from Clapham here. Two things I wanted to say this week. One is thank you so much for the fantastic Academic Archers episode. Obviously, I'm biased, but it's great to hear Nick and Cara on Dumpty Dum, and cannot wait for them to do a show with Witherspoon, possibly also with Karen Pollock, who's our resident counselling expert within the Academic Archers. That would be a fun thing to do, particularly with a postbag maybe or something like that. Yeah, it was great. The other thing was, the only thing that really came to me in all of the kind of excitement of this week of the Archers was listening to Tony go on and on and on about that bloody train set. And I thought to myself, is there a man alive or in fiction who is as emotionally kind of dense and stupid and, I don't know, remote as Tony Archer? And of course, the answer came to me immediately, which is yes, there is, and it was Tom Archer, because I can remember ringing many times to agree that Tom is a twonk, I think was the word, and that he was emotionally dense and you know, so like father like son. It just shows that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree when it comes to being just emotionally dull. What do any of them see in them? So keep up the good work, and I will speak to you again soon. Bye.
Ah, Claire from Clapham. Yes, Tony was droning on a lot, wasn't he? Oh, God. I'm sure we'll go into this, but, you know, what did that train set thing mean? Was it symbolic or not? Or was it simply... I mean, he acted so weirdly with that, about the kids playing with it, didn't he? He was literally, you know, it's been in the loft for ages. He hasn't thought about it. And then he's wrestling it from Henry.
But you know what, though, right? I've got big love for Claire, right? We do Map Corner together, went down to see her the other day, right? And again, I will say that I think this is the delivery mechanism of how we're getting this information, which we're really struggling with. But Tony actually did say, John and I used to do this together. And then here he is with John's son, and he wants to share that with him. He did say that.
He said he wished he'd done it with John.
No, he said no.
He did.
Because actually, if you I can't remember which day's episode it was, but he actually says that Pat, when he didn't want to give it to Henry because Henry was like a bull at a gate, he said. And then Pat had to remind him that John had it at an earlier age than Henry. And he says, so there goes my theory. So
There was a later bit where it turns out he was going through the, there was about half an hour where he was going through the photo book, giving you a blow-by-blow description of each one and commenting on his hair and figure. And then he said, oh, look, Pat was wrong. Here it is. That was a different set. And that was the one that John ruined. So there was two train sets.
He definitely did say, I wish I'd done more of this with John. Like he hadn't really done it much with John. So he was now projecting that onto Johnny and wanting to do that with him. Okay. Who doesn't fucking want to?
So. And the other thing was, I don't agree with you, Royfield, and not just for the fun of it. I think it's more than the delivery method. It's just Tony he's such an awkward character. And I was going to ask you, I will ask you, you're a bit of a petrol head. You like things that go round and round and round, as in Formula One. Mm. Did you have any kind of sympathy for him from that point of view? Did you think it was at all plausible that he could be so emotionally attached to this train set? Because I just don't think, I was talking to Kerry about it earlier on, and I don't think, you know, what was the example I gave Kerry? Men don't go and sit by riverbanks all day to catch, you know, with a fishing rod in their hand because they want to catch fish. It's more than that. But the way that he was describing the train set was purely about kind of like mechanics and that sort of stuff. And so I don't, even if it was the delivery method,
I'm not defending Tony here, right? But it's more than just that. He had a son who actually he's remembering, and he and his son shared lots of character traits. They both liked to tinker with engines. He said this, right? He says, John was like me. That's what he's remembering, right? Mm. He said he liked machines, John, just like me. That's what he was remembering. And just for what it's worth, you know, I'm a weird petrol head. I like Formula One, but I'm not really that much into cars. And I like driving, but I don't really care for, you know, having the latest model this and that. And I don't know a carburetor from a big end. I'm not interested and whatever. However, going up into the attic is a bit of a man cave thing, or going into the shed and finding something which has memories for you, and then kind of wanting to pass that on. What you said about angling, something which I've never done, that was explained to me. It's not about really fishing. It's about either being alone with your thoughts and contemplating, or being with somebody else and contemplating. Right? It's the fishing and the rod is almost incidental. You know, that's the excuse you give each other to be there. And wrapped up in that train set was his relationship with his departed son. And I've gone into my loft where my mum and dad live. And I remember doing this when Noah was round about born, so end of 2000. And I found an old Daredevil comic from 1965, 66, which I remember I bought when I was 14 or so. And I spent... it felt like an inordinate amount of money at the time, let's say £5. And I said, I'm going to give that to Noah. I'm going to give that to my son.
But he was too distracted with his scratch cards. He was there going, car, car.
Shut up, Dan.
You know what? You know what, Fiplin? Give me some money. You don't often know how to ruin a moment, right?
Sorry.
But the thing is, like, Tony, he is really deluded. He doesn't read people well because he was, you know, is it naivety? Is it stupidity? I don't know. Or is it sort of wishful thinking where he literally thought Johnny was taking an interest in the train set, and Johnny was certainly not doing that, was he?
No, not at all.
He was just being... probably thinking, oh God, yeah.
Johnny, I mean, Tony is consistent. So, you know, I mean, there are certain characters who, if I know it's going to be an episode primarily about them, I might give myself, you know, I might not necessarily listen to the whole thing. Not many, but only occasionally. Tony's definitely one of them. If it's a Pat and Tony episode, I'm like, okay, I can catch up on this next time. Sometimes. But Johnny, I'd started to like. But one of the problems I thought with this week's writing was how weird Johnny went, and I think that made it even more difficult to listen to Tony, because it was kind of like it was a kind of back and forth between the two of them. And you had Johnny's now apparently incredibly materialistic. He's got the self-discipline to save up money over a period of months while he obsesses about his haircut, then immediately flip to being completely cool with his haircut, and now start to spend what one assumes is going to be thousands of pounds on scratchies. So it just in between trying to deal with Tony and trying to be positive and give the whole plot the benefit of the doubt, you're also dealing with Johnny, and maybe that kind of really threw me off.
Yeah, and also to get four flowers, as he was calling them, which were lucky clovers on a scratch card, and throw them away. I mean, bloody idiots.
Yeah.
I think the character of Johnny is being dealt a dodgy hand because of COVID-19. There's no way that we had that whole setup with him and Freddie for it just to be all, you know, and the fact that, you know, he had to wear a cap everywhere. And I actually thought, you know what, good little storyline. More men worry about their receding hairlines than we care to mention, right? And then for it just to be dealt with in a couple of COVID monologues is just crazy. You know, why go through all of that and have Linda think they were dealing drugs? And I appreciate that that served another purpose, to think that Freddie was still a bit of, you know, was still a wrong'un. And then help then to service the storyline with Linda and Freddie. But you didn't need to involve Johnny in that at all. You know, we were led to believe that there was something medically seriously wrong with Johnny. Mm. And for it just to be just like, oh, yeah, well, no, I'm happy with this now. I'll just wear a cap. It's a bit like, hey, what? Huh? No, surely you've kind of have to drag this out. So all I can think is that in these 12 weeks worth of storylines that went up in smoke, a lot of this was actually Johnny and his hairline and him coming to terms with hair loss, premature hair loss, considering he's what, only in his early 20s, etc. And this is just a nod and a wink to that. So, because when we come back out of the COVIDs, we're going to move on.
God, it feels so long ago that Tony shaved his hair off and sort of went, you can do it. And they all did it together and it was all fine.
Mm.
I was kind of thinking, was that pre-COVID? I can't remember.
No, it wasn't. It was at the start. It was the start when we, you know. But hey, yeah. It was just bizarre in terms of the lopsidedness of it. You know, we had this big setup,
what
and
is
then
hair?
they're kind of hip, cool, and trendy, aren't they? Asymmetrical haircuts.
Yeah.
Mm. That after thoroughly going through Claire from Clapham's call and giving it the thorough doing over that it needed, it's time for the Cranky Yankee.
Hello, Dumpty Dumpters. This is the Cranky Yankee calling from the Metro New York area. And I want to compliment you all for your exquisite analyzation. I know that's not a word, but I've been in isolation way too long about the Archers. It's always a pleasure to listen to the podcasts and to see how inclusive the community is. And I just want to say, keep going. You're doing a great job. I also want to compliment the editing job of the script writers, because I think it's gotten much better as the weeks go on and they switch from person to person as they go along. And I'm finding it easier and easier to listen to. I also want to say how much I enjoy listening to it as the omnibus nowadays. Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, Cranky Yankee. So it feels like the editing's getting better in the monologues, just as we're moving into the dialogues. Would you agree that that's happened? Can you notice an improvement in how it's been put together?
Peter?
Oh, Royfield, I was thinking you would take that.
No.
Okay. last week, I was full of positivity, and I was saying how I thought that they were making a lot of progress, and it started to be a bit slicker. And I think one of the things I said was there was a kind of uniformity of tone, which I think made it a bit sort of a smoother experience. And then this week happened, and so I'm not trying to be contrary, but I found the exact opposite. I felt it was like a big backward step this week, with the exception, obviously, of our big love for Joy and also Harrison's, you know, little cameos. But yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing for the sake of it, but it definitely wasn't my experience this week. But generally, as a general trend, it has improved.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
I thought you were going to speak there.
Yeah. But it is nice that people are enjoying it. I mean, I don't think we've talked about this, but all of my Dumpty Dums have been done during the coronavirus, have been done since the monologues have come along. We've never done it when it's been the normal back and forth. And I think you two were already a bit jaded when I turned up. And so it's when people call in with their kind of more positive take, it does remind me of my early Dumpty Dums, where Royfield was slightly shocked that I was so affectionate.
Yeah, those first few sentences of yours.
Yeah, Royfield thought he was going to get a sort of like a wild-eyed misanthrope, and instead I was like, "Yeah, it's great, I love it." But it is nice to hear people enjoying it, and you know, and keeping up the positivity.
Mm. Yes, it is lovely indeed. Now, the last caller in of this extended Dumdy Dum in terms of record time, because we had a technical mishap, folks, is Sandra.
Hello, this is Sandra Jenkinson from a sunny Waterlooville, where I've been doing some early morning gardening. Get me. Anyway, I saw the tweet from Kerry Davis at the weekend informing us that we're actually about to get some dialogue in the programme. So I hope that satisfies everybody. I hope it's going to be a good one. Bye.
Well, I think we got a little bit of a preview.
Yeah. Sorry,
Kerry. I was just going to say, I think we got a bit of a preview at this end, and Royfield and I did, because we heard a very tender dialogue between a mother and a daughter where the mother was suffering some technical issues. And, you know, if we can get some of that in the Archers in a couple of weeks, it was wonderful. There was, you know.
Oh, it was quite tender, wasn't it? With a little bit of swearing from both of us.
A little bit of swearing, but it was all done in honeyed tones, and you were sort of aware of the imposition on your daughter's afternoon, and she didn't want to patronise you, but at the same time didn't necessarily want to take too long over it. And it was, yeah, it was lovely.
And I think also bearing in mind that she could have gone mad because I might have broken her laptop, she was very, very restrained, wasn't she?
Yes. No, it was, but anyway, so yeah, if we can have you know, the Warbis household, sort of like the general sort of atmosphere and kind of dialogue transported into the Archers, then all the better.
Oh, were you gripped?
It wasn't enough. More, please. Yeah. Let's get on to a commissioning editor. Warbis, a gripping docudrama starting, you know, next Friday.
Okay. I'm up for that.
Royfield, was it just me?
It was just you, Peter.
Okay.
No. I thought Mimi sounded lovely, and you really got a sense of that mother and daughter dynamic. And I found it quite moving, actually. Mum had a problem with technology, you know. Yes, it's not a spring chicken anymore. Young daughter, you know, rushed to the rescue and basically said, "Mom, have you switched it off and on again?" And when it happened, you know, then it all worked again. It was wonderful. It was a lesson for the ages.
I thought you were going to say for the aged.
That as well.
I would pinch your arm next time I see you if you had said that.
Kerry, do we have any emails?
Ooh, we do. Okay, yeah, we do have a couple of messages. We've got one from Jenny from Southampton. She says, "Hi, lovely Royfield, esteemed Kerry co-host, positive Peter, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Jenny from Southampton. I thought this week was the best monologue week so far. Really story-led and a great mix of emotions. This is about last week's. Poor old Alice. Although we've all seen this drinking problem coming on for ages, I think it's great that the Archers are showing how easy it is for family and friends not to realise anything's wrong. Often when high achievers struggle, they do it like they do everything else. That is to say, really well. Alice's default is to act like everything's fine to such a point that she can even fool herself. I've never liked Alice, but I'm absolutely rooting for her at the moment. My hope is that Debbie will come back and help her. I hope to God she doesn't get pressured into motherhood. Not all doom and gloom, though, because Emma forging the children's letters did make me chuckle. I hope you're all well. Jenny from Southampton. Putting my name again for Kerry's ease of reference. Thank you, Jenny. Very kind. And then we have another, which is a text message. And this is from Purple Pumpkin. Purple Pumpkin says, "Dear Kerry, Royfield, Pete and Dumpty Dummers everywhere, thank you, thank you, thank you for staying fun and mostly positive. I'm finding the monologues a chore that I have to get through to earn my place on the tweet along as a Dumpty Dummer. So really struggle with finding something nice to say. Tim Bentinck suggested the powers that be chose monologues over risking poor production values, and I think that was the wrong call. Can't wait for some more plot and interactions. Your loyal listener, Purple Pumpkin." There we go.
Kerry, given that you can be slightly intolerant of sort of inconsistencies and sort of some of the more unrealistic parts of the, you know, and then you have callers like Jack who are, you know, it's the immersive nature that sort of really gets them. Do you think we would be giving the Archers as much of a kicking if it was a slightly scratchy, poorly produced, you know, different sound recording levels version? Do you think
I don't think so. No, I think we'd be more generous and forgiving. I think it'd be more fun and more interesting.
So you think it would be like going to see your kids in the school play? You just sort of squint a bit, forget about the one on the end picking his nose and that sort of stuff.
Just cry a lot. No, I do think they could have had a go, and I wouldn't have minded it being a bit rough around the edges, really.
Yeah,
I disagree. You know, I'm not saying that you would change your mind necessarily, but I think the great Ambridge listening public would not have been happy, and I think because there's a false equivalency that goes on, and people say, well, I've heard Dead Ringers, or I've heard this, or I've heard that. And those programs are produced once a week, you know. And what people just aren't getting is the production time for this is longer than all of those shows. And because whether they could have used another bit of technology, there was still going to be a ramp up time in terms of just using the new technology and getting the production flow behind it sorted. So and remember that, you know, we've gone from 6 days a week to four, right? So this is obviously taking them more time to put together. It doesn't matter what anybody says, it just is. And then we have, as I kind of explained to somebody the other day, there's been a way institutionally of producing this for 70 years, for 69 years, they've done this a certain way. If you change it overnight, as they did, there's going to be a few speed bumps, and you have to get the production system working behind it to get it back up to speed. And I think if they'd use Zoom or whatever, it still would have taken time, and there wouldn't have been 6 episodes a week. You know, the editor, the technical person, all these people have to get their heads around this new way of doing things because they've institutionalized themselves for 69 years of doing it one way, rightly or wrongly. That's just that's just going to happen, and then people would have said it sounds crappy. What about Dead Ringers, or what about blah 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 blah, that do one of these a week and that sounds awesome? I think they're damned if they did and damned if they didn't. The only thing that would have really appeased people is if they'd have gone, right, we can't do this. We're going to go off air for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then you could have come back with anything. People say, thank God for that. But because they just went, in effect, seamlessly from the old way to the new way, people just gone, oh, I don't like this. Because all these other BBC shows, it's all fine for them, forgetting they only do one of those a week. So there I just think that... Way. Go on.
Sorry, Roy, but there is a third way that no one's discussed, which is the way they used to do Rainbow, the children's programme. Did you know that Zippy and George were voiced by the same actor?
Oh.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, you know, if Tim and a few of the other actors could, you know, tool up and, you know, do a bit of impersonating.
People are always saying that the younger males just all sound the same, so that would be fine. Speaking about the sort of lead time to the prepping of it and everything, did anyone think about the social distancing in this episode where they were all round on the green with the kids playing and stuff like that? And didn't Rosie hit Daisy? But there are some things that they're doing that are to do with COVID, aren't there? And being in isolation. But then all of a sudden they're all on the green and everyone's hitting each other.
I must admit, I'm confused now. And it's probably going to say a lot about me as to what exactly, not when you're in shops, but really what are the rules now. I've seen people, anyway, whatevs. I'll shut up. Right, because we're getting, it's a whole can of worms.
Yeah.
So I'll just shut up and reverse out of that. So what was the last thing you said there, Kerry? It's social distancing, da, 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 da.
Yeah, everyone hitting each other.
Okay, cool. Peter, you're a parent of a toddler.
Yeah.
When you take him down the park, what are the social distancing rules? How do you explain them to a toddler?
I don't think you do. And I think there's a... very few parents pull the children apart, and I think part of it is we're all desperate for the kids to catch up on their immunity and also their socialization. So, you know, any kids under about 15 months old, which is the age my kid is, I think, yeah, that there's more damage to be done by just, you know, lack of immunity and lack of sort of social awareness than actually from the COVIDs. But then also you've got to be aware of the potential of, you know, catching and transmitting the disease. So I think what you do is you sort of secretly embrace any serendipitous clashes of the children, leave it for a few seconds, and then go and peel them apart. That seems to be the way it's done. But we haven't been organizing any kind of meetups with other parents, and when we do, we keep the kids apart. But is that a bit of a rambling answer to your question?
No, I mean they were outside and everything, weren't they, which is a bit different, I guess.
If the kids run up and start touching each other and kind of rolling around together, it does open a bit of a can of worms, doesn't it? Because it's like you're making a big show of standing apart from the parents, and in the meantime you've got these two little vectors sharing as much body fluid as they possibly can.
And do you think Pip didn't speak to Joy because she was trying to do social distancing, or because she's horrible?
They shared the car, didn't they? And wasn't Pip a little bit mean about Joy after the... Because Ben and Josh, I think, had a good time with Joy. And I think if memory serves, Pip wasn't quite as charitable.
Because Joy was really worrying. She's like, oh, is Pip not speaking to me because of this, that and the other? Or, you know, I thought, oh, come on, Pip, just speak to her.
Yeah, is Pip? I mean, I've always been a Pip's part of a number of characters that, and I don't know whether it's me or whether it's the Archers. There's several characters who I really have liked historically, who I'm starting to turn against, and Pip's one of them. Like, I've always liked Pip when she was growing up, and then now I'm a bit kind of like, oh, you know, you're not turning out the way I thought you would.
Yeah, I didn't like her from the off, but
oh, okay.
Really?
I was always on Ben and Josh's side. But even when they were kind of like, you know, they were always being described as trouble, and I still like them. But I liked, you know, but Pip, I liked all of those kids, to be honest.
It was just a bit heartbreaking, Joy sort of going, oh, they're eating more of the sweet corn than the ducks, and there's like nothing. No interaction. Anyway.
Mm. Right. I think it's probably an opportune time for us to break, have a little bit of I suppose what you can do, you can hit pause right now, everybody. Nip, have a comfort break, maybe put the kettle on, or even if you're next to your loved one, turn to your loved one and say, I love you. I'm enjoying Dum-de-dum, but I just wanted to say I love you, because that'd be a nice thing to do right now. And we'll come back the other side, and it will be Millie Bell's final hooroo.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
G'day everyone. Millie Bell here with the social media roundup for the week. And we wondered whether Fallon would regret being more welcoming to Joy. And Christy Nichols said, I'm excited to have Joy back. I didn't love her in the first one or two appearances, but I'm glad to have her now. It sounds like she might be able to identify one of the fly tippers. Will she catch Tim and his crew before Harrison will? Well done, Christy. And Katrina Wong said, while I would have the same reaction to Joy as Kirsty, aka Hyde, I have a lot of empathy for her because she's lonely. Rosie McGlynn said, Joy is fab and will be a great friend to Fallon. I don't see the issue with multi-generational friendships. I have friends who are 30 to 40 years older than me and feel very fortunate to have them in my life. Sandra Jenkinson said, Joy is lonely. That's why she invests too much in other people. My guess is that she will be supportive to Kirsty when the time comes. And Rob Williams said, blow Fallon and Joy. Nobody else think Johnny is approaching industrial to Olympic levels of stupidity. What was it? 50 pounds on scratchers only to throw them away without actually checking what the winning symbols are? And that's without going into the pointless futility of astrology, not understanding just how long the odds are. So thank you to Rob for bringing us back to our senses with that. I have to say, I absolutely agree. Joy is obviously very, very lonely. She's also incredibly kind. And I would avoid her just because she talks too much and it would drive me crazy. But Fallon is a really lovely young woman, so I'm sure she's going to do the right thing. And we also said that Tony eventually got what he wanted. But will Harrison, because Harrison was very keen to get back to his wife, if you remember. And Stephen Bowden said, I found the Harrison Fallon holiday thing a bit too much by the end of Thursday's episode. It was good to have a bit of a plot, albeit something self-contained. I don't believe it will open up anything more complicated with Timotei dropping Ed into the silage, but there's only so much romantic policeman I can take. And Rob Williams said, what did Harrison say when he was deciding whether or not to call in and tell Joy what had happened? That's not what gets me messages on Susan's radio show. I thought he was a policeman for something other than self-aggrandizement. And Rob Wilson-Williams then said, oh, good grief, I was just about to throw something if I heard any more of that man-child in his train set. I fully expected to hear, if you've been affected by any of the issues raised in tonight's programme, please ring 0800-CHEW. Chew. Thank you very much, everybody. And Rob, you are my very, very last poster.
This is my last episode with you. I've had the most awesome run. I think I've been doing this for about 6 years. I used to do it by myself, and then one day I heard Yokel Bear on Dumpty Dum, and I thought, I need someone to help me, and he's the man, and it turned out he was the very man. I'd like to thank Yokel Bear for the laughs, for all the support, and for being someone I could have a little grumble about the arches with on the side. Very much would like to thank Royfield for having given me the opportunity, and Lucy V for all her support, and absolutely Witherspoon, who is just one of the nicest people around. I'm so glad that he's also my friend. But I also have other friends that I've made through Dumpty Dum. And I'd like to say to everybody who's called in or who has played with us on Facebook, thank you very much. We leave you in very, very good hands. The new team is shaping up beautifully. I know you will enjoy them. And of course, there is a new page being set up. You must join it because it will be so much easier for you to interact. And with that, for the final time, I say to you, hooroo!
Oh, thank you for that, Millie. And in lots of ways, your contribution to Dumpty Dum, which has been, goodness, 6 years, was a real pointer to me that we were kind of onto something. When I asked you to do the social media roundup, and you very kindly said yes, and I think neither of us knew back then that 6 years later you'd still be doing it. And unlike, say, Yokel Bear or some of the other contributors, we've never actually met because you're all the way down there in the Antipodes, and you're. Efforts and your work have been so sterling, Millie Bell, for all this time. And I think we've probably only ever spoken twice. I can definitely remember once. And even then, it was like utterly years ago. I think literally when we first started doing this. And you are such an incredible self-starter. You just get the stuff done. And you've been such an amazing glue and an amazing contributor for the podcast for years. And it has been really quite touching to end up with your daughter doing the Dumpty Dum, because I think it was a few weeks after you first started doing, or maybe a few months after you first started doing them, that you did the Dumpty Dum together. So there's a really lovely way of, circling your time with us here at Dumpty Dum. But again, Millie Bell, I just like to thank you for all of the hours. And it has been hours that you spent curating and managing our Facebook page and then doing your wonderful social media roundups for us. So hooroo to you. And as somebody said on Facebook, don't be a stranger, and why don't you become a caller innerer yourself now? Because we always want to hear your voice. So again, from myself, from Kerry, from Peter, from Lucy, from Harriet Sandbridges, everybody that's associated with the podcast, thank you for 6 years of doing the social media roundup. Kerry Warbis.
Oh, yes.
We haven't called you Auntie Kerry yet, have we, in this episode?
Mm. No, you haven't. No, I think that was because who was it who was calling me that? Witherspoon hasn't rung in, has he? To use it and trigger us.
Yeah, but we need to keep that up. We don't need to just fall fallow. So, Auntie Kerry Warbis, do you have any tweets of the last 7 days?
I do indeed. Yes. So, this first one is from Neil Wallington, who is at Dr. Wallington on the Twitters. And he says, giving this another go, it turns out Tim O'Tay is known to the police. PC Burns had him in for questions last Jehoba.
I can't lie.
You actually laughed at that one.
I did. That's funny.
Amazing. Then this is an exchange between, now I keep using these two people, I'm so sorry, but it's I'm Buddhish, who is a bit Buddhish, and he says, funnily enough, Intimate Pergola was the original name for the Millennium Falcon. And Alison, who is at Nozilla _63, replies to him and said, are you sure that wasn't Carpet Burns' moniker when he was a stripper?
Hey.
Whoop. this next one, I put it in here and I think you might edit it out because it's not very charitable, but it made me laugh because it's just really simple. It's from Amanda White at Amanda White Art. And she says, I think it's time Tony was sectioned. But you might not want to leave that in, I don't know. We're nearly there. We've got one more and then the tweet of the week. And now this one is by at Pete Fickling. And he says, Donda Esther.
Yeah.
He says, Donda Esther el hombre de tipo de fly, por favor, pet. Oh, I laughed out loud in the street when I read that. But this is Tweet of the Week. And this is by Ian at Rutherian. And he was replying to a tweet of mine. So it's all a bit incestuous, this. But I put, Harrison's got the raging horn, because he did at the end of the show. And Ian says, whereas Tony has got the raging hornby.
Good.
You didn't laugh, but it's clever.
Obviously, he's referring to Nick Hornby of Fever Pitch and those early 90s books and stuff. Folks, dumdydum.com. Go there. It's got stuff there. It's got links to all of our stuff on YouTube. Oh, and I haven't said this for a few weeks, but please go onto YouTube and go and subscribe to our channel. We have got to the magical mark of 1,000, which means we'll probably start getting 2p a month from the good people down at YouTube. But we are putting more content up on YouTube. This week, I will put up my interview with Ben Norris, which is his first day on set, which I did right at the start of the coronas. That's before the Friday Zooms kind of like took over and stuff. So we still have that. And I've got a lovely interview as well with Anya, who played Lexi, similarly about her first day on set. So go on to YouTube, type in either Dumdy Dum or Roy Field, and it all points to the same place. And you can watch all the past Zooms. But then also there will be some new content as well. A great way to help keep the whole kit and caboodle, which is this podcast, on the straight and narrow, is by going on to patreon.com and donating $2 per show. And it helps whenever we've got a few expenses to pay for things like SpeakPipe or some new coding that needs to be done on the website. It means we can actually get it done. So if you want to go and support the podcast financially, you can do that by going on to patreon.com. You don't have to give us shekel, give us money, give us moolah. And we know that times are hard. We're in the middle of a global pandemic. But one thing you can do, if you haven't got any readies, is maybe go on to Apple iTunes, write us a review, because that is a great way for us to have the oxygen of publicity so we get more listeners onto the podcast. Now, the next bit's in red.
Yes, it is. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message, or send a text message starting with dumb to 077-862-00690.
You can find Yokel Bear on Twitter, quite simply, at Yokel Bear. You can find Dumdy Dum at Dumdy Dum. Kerry Warbis can be found at?
At Kerry Warbis.
Pete Fickling is at?
Pete Fickling.
And I can be found at Royfield, which is ROI for India, FIELD. On Facebook, we are moving from our page to a group, and people are saying, why are you doing this, Royfield? I will tell you. Because if you have a page, it means that it's more labor intensive for the admins. We have not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 new admins. And you actually heard one of them today. It was Sandra Jenkinson, is one of our new admins. So what we decided to do is move to a group scenario, which means that when you post a message, good listener, you're not shuffled onto that little funny right column on a page. You go onto the middle of the page, and really it's much more democratic. And talking about democracy, you'll be seeing, you'll, if you go onto the Dum-de-Dum Facebook group, you'll see that I got a right slap across the chops by the listeners for one of my suggestions that I said we'd do on the group this week. I won't tell you what that is, other than to say, why don't you go and sign up to the Dum-de-Dum group on Facebook to see the kicking and the shellacking that I got from half a dozen of the listeners for just merely suggesting something, which people says, no, Roy Ford, we don't want that on our Dum-de-Dum Facebook group. Stop that, cease and desist, man. So, yes. So go onto Facebook, type in Dum-de-Dum. You will see there are two Dum-de-Dums, the one with the big blue masthead, which has the lovely picture of Pete and of Kerry, Auntie Kerry, and then with Yokel Bear and Millie Bell, and with me when I was about 20 stone lighter. That's the one that you need to sign up for. It's the Dum-de-Dum group. You need to answer a very simple question, and then you get in there, and all fun and hilarity then ensues when you are a member of that Facebook group. I have to big up my Flickat posse, because the Flickat posse deserve a big up. So I'm bigging you up, Flickat posse. You're saying, what is the Flick app? Quite simply, you go onto either Apple iTunes, type in Flick, and then or the Google Play Store. And it is an app where, quite simply, when you download it, you type in Dum-de-Dum and you get Dum-de-Dum on your phone. And I quite like it. It's all a bit kind of like bit personal, bit intimate with the other Dum-de-Dummers. And we just have fun down there. So big up to the Flick app posse, and especially to people like Drew and to Rosie Porty, who are all over that app. That's us. That's been a week in Ambridge, and the monologues are nearly over. I hear cheers from Middle England, and good times are just around the corner, folks. And as one of the listeners said, this has been a trial of all of us. And we will be shown our mettle by being Ambridge Ultras, by listening through the last 3 months. We understand the reasons why they did what they had to do, but they've kept some small flicker, a small light that is forever Ambridge glowing. But my God, do we need a raging fire when these monologues are over? My God, they need to burn that barn down, quite literally, metaphorically, in every other which way but, because I can't take much more of this. Pete Ficklin, would you like to sign off?
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
How about you, Auntie Kerry Warbis?
In the words of Joy Horville, you can't put a price on a smile.
Toodle, everybody. See you all next week. Bye-bye.
I'd like to thank Yokel Bear for the laughs, for all the support, and for being someone I could have a little grumble about the ashes with on the side. Very much would like to thank Royfield for having given me the opportunity, and Lucy V for all her support, and absolutely Witherspoon, who is just one of the nicest people around. I'm so glad that he's also my friend. But I also have other friends that I've made through Dumpty Dum, and I'd like to say to everybody who's called in or who has played with us on Facebook, thank you very much. And with that, for the final time, I say to you, hooroo!